Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody weighing 155 pounds or less. Hello, and welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show. I am your host, the mandated reporter, and after last night, boy, I'm not only mortified, I'm depressed. Mr. Mark Radulich, if you'd like to call into the show, the number is 323-657-0901. Hey, we're back to our old guest call-in line. 323-657-0901. We got a pretty good show today. We're going to discuss last night's interesting UFC 156 card that Jeff Harris was live and in person for. He's actually got an exclusive interview with Damian Maia after his impressive win over John Fitch, so we're going to get to that a little bit later as soon as I bring Jeff out. We're also going to talk about the Bellator card that I covered, the Season 8 first round of the lightweight tournament, headlined by Rickles and Cupcake Woodard. So we'll get to that and whatever other news is going on today. Just one quick announcement. Now, for those of you that listen live, pay attention here because this is important. If you get this show Monday when it gets posted to the site, featured in the top part of the site, this won't make much of a difference other than when it's available for download. But due to circumstances beyond my control, we will be moving. Yes, for the first time in over 2 years, we will be permanently moving the time of this show from Sunday morning at 11 a.m. till Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you're out on the West Coast, that's 6 o'clock, right around dinner time for you people. But yes, myself, Jeff Harris, Pat Mullen, and anybody else from the 411 site who wants to get on the action will be coming at you live Sunday nights starting a week from today at 9 p.m. The only time we'll be back at our normal, previously normal 11 a.m. slot is if there's a WWE pay-per-view at night. So like the night of WrestleMania, we'll do the morning show as usual. But for all the other shows, 9 p.m. So, and I'll remind everyone of that before the show is out today. All right, so here's our live reporter on the scene, 411 Zone Clark Kent, Mr. Jeffrey Harris. Good morning, Superman.
The Wildcat Jeffrey Harris is back. Good morning to you, Mark Radulich. I'm very happy about the time change, so thank you for considering people who live on the West Coast, finally. If you would like
thank my wife. It was her idea at gunpoint.
Thank you, Mrs. Radulich. And if you would like to call in and talk to us, 323-657-0901 is the number. Still in Las Vegas, recovering from UFC 156. Very good show. It was a bit of a rough day. I can only assume it was a violent case of food poisoning, because I felt like there was like an alien xenomorph chest burster inside of me and was like tearing up my insides or something. I feel a little better now, but I don't know. I think the food I had at the Mandalay Bay, there was something bad about it because
you might have just had a 24-hour flu. If you were having like severe stomach cramps, and I don't want to get gross here, but if it was that sort of thing, it was probably just a 24-hour bug.
It could have been that, and I hear that's going around. Just because I do feel a certain amount better now, but it started once I pretty much got to the event yesterday, and it did not stop. And it was sort of rough to get through the whole event. And enjoy everything. But, again, feeling better now, and thanks for letting me join in today. Mark, it's always fun to get to
you. Well, you're a super trooper for doing that with a stomach virus. That's pretty impressive. So just a little bit about – I always like to do this when you're there live, Jeff. A little bit about your trip, who you saw, what I mean, not the news that's been reported to everybody. What, you know, if something that hasn't been reported that you were able to pick up, just kind of the general atmosphere from the time you got there till now.
It was an exciting atmosphere. You know, people were pumped for this fight. Of course, we got the exclusive interview with Rashad Evans, which you can read up on our site right now in MMA. So it was pretty cool that we were able to speak with Rashad Evans. The former light heavyweight champion. You know, we have a little thing at 411 Mania where we're sort of worried when we interview guys because there's a thing called the 411 Mania curse where guys right after they interview, if they have a fight right after, they tend to lose. And so if I did in fact curse you with Rashad Evans, I am deeply, deeply sorry, and I do apologize.
To that end, I have a favor to ask.
Yeah.
If Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez are put together for a third meeting, could you please interview Cain Velasquez right before their fight? I would appreciate
it. Well, funny story. Back a few years ago when I first started writing MMA for the site, Cain Velasquez, I did get to interview him before his third UFC fight, I think, with Denise Stojanek. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. And he did win that fight by knockout. So I have interviewed Cain before, and the curse didn't hold up there. So it doesn't happen all the time. So I don't have, like, flawless record of cursing fighters into losing their next fight when I interview them. So UFC 156, one of the big stories, which you can read right now up coming off the site, after the main event where Jose Aldo defeated Frankie Edgar by unanimous decision, Dana White said he received a text from a fighter, from a guy that says, hey, I really want to fight Jose Aldo, and it's a lightweight fighter who says he wants to move down to fight him. That fighter is Anthony Pettis, so take that for what you will.
What do you think about that? I mean, when you saw that, because, I mean, the smart money was on Anthony Pettis taking on the winner of Ben Henderson, Gilbert Melendez. Though the wrinkle in all of this was if they ever get Eddie Alvarez straightened out, he was promised a title shot, which kind of throws everything up in the air. When you saw that Anthony Pettis was just going to say F it, basically, and go after Jose Aldo, what was your first thought?
My thought is maybe Anthony Pettis, apparently he doesn't cut a lot at 155, and he can make that weight, and maybe he maybe he's tired of waiting and doesn't want to wait around as long and wants to get in there and get a UFC title fight as soon as possible. That could be possible. Maybe Duke Rufus will talk to him and maybe cooler heads will prevail and he'll still pursue a lightweight title shot. Or maybe Duke Rufus is confident he can make that weight. We'll have to wait and see what the story is. It's a bit of a slippery slope because, you know, you have some really tough-looking guys at featherweight right now. Besides Ricardo Llamas, there's also the Dustin Poirier fight with Cub Swanson coming up. That's a big, important fight. Korean Zombie, apparently he's still injured and is still going to be out until around May.
Yeah,
but,
he tweeted last night that he wants Jose Aldo next. Meanwhile, Dana White was like, yeah, he's still injured and no one knows when he's coming back.
Well, Dana White is saying May, so maybe the timeline could work out for Korean Zombie. But I just think it's a bit of a slippery slope because there are guys who can fight Jose Aldo right now. I mean, Anthony Pettis, he had that great showing on Fox, and, you know, he's a rising star without a doubt, you know, with things like the Showtime knee and everything that he actually hit on Donald Cerrone. So, I mean, my gut tells me I really think, you know, we have some featherweight, I think, is really becoming strong right now, and I think you got to have those guys fight before we start considering. You know, we just had a guy move down to fight Jose Aldo for a super fight. So I think, you know, we have to start having these guys fight at featherweight before we maybe consider someone like Pettis. I think Pettis has unfinished business in the lightweight division, and he should pursue that before thinking about making a move down. But that is just this writer's personal opinion.
Let me stop you there. I would actually agree with you. I didn't like the idea of right now Pettis taking on Aldo. I think you've got Korean Zombie and Ricardo Llamas that are right there. You're right. You're absolutely right. Dustin Poirier could continue his comeback from having lost to the Korean Zombie by defeating Cub Swanson, and then he's a possible consideration. There are, you know, I'm in no rush to see Jose Aldo back in there again. He can wait until June, July, August, and wouldn't bother me none. They've got other stuff to do between now and then, so it's not like we have to rush to get him back on pay-per-view. So that said, there's plenty of time to work out Korean Zombie Ricardo Llamas. If they want to make them fight each other for the number one contendership, I'm fine with that. If they just want to go with one of those two guys in the meantime, I'm good with that too. I would rather see my thing is, and they actually talked about this at length on the Man Cave podcast. There's money in the bank waiting for them, especially if it's promoted right, between Ben Henderson and Anthony Pettis. And I feel like throwing that away on a rush job of Jose Aldo versus Anthony Pettis is a mistake. I think that's cutting off your nose to spite your face. So hopefully they'll work this out. And quite frankly, every time I just had this picture last night of Dana White with cards in front of him of matches to make after the assumed winners of UFC 156 actually won their fights, and him just tearing them up and throwing them in the air like confetti, especially after the Overeem fight.
Mark, to be honest, that's what I was doing last night. My pick'ems were ruined. My fantasy picks were ruined. And I was like, well, now what? I was kind of like, now what? But it's not all bad, because it does kind of make things a little interesting. To see where it's going to go for here, and this is kind of what I like about the sport, because we see this is a sport where more often than not we can see these crazy upsets that we usually don't even imagine.
Let's go ahead and break down the card one by one, because there's a lot to talk about with the top three fights. We just got into it a little bit with the featherweight fight, so let's just get into the actual fight itself, and then we can get into some of these other tangents one by one. I don't want to blow them all at the top and then have to go back and talk about these fights. So Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo, I don't have your scores in front of me. I have my Bellator report up. What did you, how did you see it? I thought it was 4-1, Jose Aldo, though I wouldn't have been surprised if it was 3-2. The judges had it on two scorecards, 4-1, and on one scorecard, 3-2. How did you see it? Anybody that thought Frankie Edgar won, Pat Mullen apparently thought Frankie Edgar won it. I'm not quite sure how, but go ahead.
Pat Mullen hates the featherweights anyway, and he hates Ronda Rousey, blah blah blah. But we won't get into that.
No, you won't.
I'm not a judging expert. It's all just my opinion. And I know Adelaide Bird, who's totally incompetent, was a judge for this fight last night. But I did score it 3-2 for Aldo. I think it could have been a 4-1. It just depends on the last round. I think when you look at the fight, Edgar did sort of open up and get better as the fight went along. And Aldo did slow down a couple steps. But just overall, I think Aldo owned the fight. He did more damage. He landed the more powerful shots. He landed the cleaner shots. And while I like Edgar a lot, and he's tough as nails, and he has amazing cardio, he has just that – he's got this sort of point fighter, pitter-patter style. He's hitting a lot, but it just doesn't look like his hits are doing as much damage. And while maybe he has volume – does he have the significant strikes? Is he really winning? I don't think he won. I don't think he took the title. And this is kind of my feeling. I know it was controversial, but this was my feeling after the second Ben Henderson fight. You know, he tends to fight these very close point fighter fights, and he uses that pitter-patter style. I thought he lost the first fight with BJ Penn. 4-1, quite honestly, or 3-2. I thought he lost that fight. So, I mean, sometimes I think you need to do more than just being able to move in and out and just being able to just pitter-patter guys with those shots. Well, I'm sure they do hurt a little bit. I think you got to do more than that to show I really won, I'm the winner of this fight. And it's not doing a victory lap with your team and excessively celebrating after you go the distance. To me, that's not a mark that you won. Go ahead, Mr. Radulov.
Well, there was a statement made on Twitter, it seemed to be echoed by a lot of people, that Frankie Edgar style seems to be get abused for a majority of the fight, wait for the guy to tire out, and then knock him over. Apparently it worked like gangbusters in the third fight with Gray Maynard, but it's a style that's going to get him severely injured if he keeps it up, and he's not going to win fights that way, not against guys who are accurate with their strikes. I mean, the thing that I saw in that fight was Jose Aldo, to me, cut Frankie Edgar to pieces and was very accurate with his strikes. Yes, he slowed down in the last two rounds, but, I mean, once you've gotten to the fourth round and you've won the first three pretty decisively, I feel like a lot of these champions are willing to just coast and do just enough to get through. You know, and it may be that – go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, by the time you get to the fourth round, you're just you're too tired to keep up the pace you had. So, again, doing enough to win, maybe all you've got left. But getting back to the problems I have with Frankie Edgar, and this is why I haven't been a huge fan of the guy. He said the thing to me that it's one of those statements where it immediately turns me off to you. I thought I did enough to win. Okay, doing enough to win is it doesn't make me a fan of yours, number one. Number two, I don't think it's a good strategy for the case. Don't do just enough to win. Overwhelm the shit out of him. You know, Antonio Silva could have probably done enough to win in the third round against Alistair Overeem, and instead he knocked his head off. You know, you need to have a killer instinct, in other words. That's really what I'm getting at. You need to be Tyrone Woodley in there from last night. My goodness. But we'll get to that in a moment.
Mark, he said that after the last two Ben Henderson fights. And I am on the totally on the same wavelength with you. I love Frankie Edgar. He's tough as nails. He's got some of the best cardio in the business. But, you know, to me, it's not enough to say I did just enough. You're in there with guy like especially when you're in there with a guy like Jose Aldo. And when I think Jose could have had that last round because he had that really nice big Superman punch. And to me, that was the biggest shot of the whole round. So that's just me, but that's just my opinion. So apparently Frankie Edgar will stay at featherweight for now, and I guess we'll see if he can work his way back up. And I mean, let's admit, Jose Aldo is a class above a lot of other featherweights. So let's see how well Frankie can do with some of these other top-ranked
featherweights. Did you hear talk of Frankie Edgar dropping to bantamweight?
I don't know if that's serious. I think his coach before has said Frankie's natural weight class probably is bantamweight, and he could probably make that weight. And Dana White just said, yes, I'm fine with him going down if he wants because, you know, it's better for him not to be getting beat up and just getting hit and getting battered for two rounds by these much bigger dudes. Which I sort of understand, but I don't know if that's serious. I think he will stick with featherweight. I think he will stick with featherweight right now, but he's definitely not moving back up. That's the general takeaway from post UFC.
Well, Dana White absolutely forbid it. He said that we're done watching Frankie get tossed around the cage. It's 145 at the top, and that's it. He's refusing to allow him to fight anymore at 155. That door has closed.
Correct.
In 2 weeks we have on Fuel TV a title fight. We'll get more into depth with this next week, but from London you've got the interim bantamweight title, Penn and Barrow versus Michael McDonald. And I'll tell you what, if Frankie Edgar opts to drop to bantamweight, I wouldn't necessarily give him an immediate title shot against the winner of that fight. But, you know, if he – I would sign off on a drop to bantamweight, let him fight one or two of the top guys at bantamweight, And then, especially if Dominic Cruz isn't coming back or is going to be out longer than this summer for the, you know, for the foreseeable future, why not drop down to bantamweight, a weight class that's more suited for his frame and height. And now you've got another made star there. You know, that's a guy who, if he's in the fight, gets that title back onto pay-per-view or the top of a proper Fox card. You know, because right now with it being around either Michael McDonald or Hannon Burrow or pretty much anyone else left at bantamweight, there's not much you can do with it as far as making your money off that title. Would you agree or disagree?
I don't know if I agree with the drop to bantamweight right now. And I got to be honest, even though he's not an old man, you know, being in all these wars, they will make you a much older fighter in the sport, and your body only has so many wars in you. So I think I want him to stick at featherweight for now, and I see if he can still match up with some of these tougher guys at featherweight, and just see how he can do and see how well he responds to being, I mean, in like 7 5-round wars, basically.
Let's move on to quite possibly last night's biggest dud. And again, this was one of those where, you know, if you're Dana White, we kept waiting for him to pull a gun out and just shoot himself, much like Rashad Evans did in that fight, shot himself in the foot. That was quite frankly one of the worst fights. That's my contender right now for worst fight of the year. Granted, it's only February, but I can't imagine much worse than that. Again, I had somebody over to the house last night who's never watched any combat sports, not boxing, not MMA, and I looked at her after that fight, and I was like, I apologize. This happens every time someone new comes to watch. The last time that happened, I think it was Frank Mir and Mirko Krokop. We all know how that turned out. But Rashad Evans and Rogério Nogueira had one of the worst boxing matches I've ever seen, and Antonio Little Nog won it 2-1, and the whole point of this fight seemed to be setting up Rashad Evans for a super fight with Anderson Silva, and up in smoke that went. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, for starters, I don't think it was the worst fight I ever saw. I was completely mystified by what was going on with Rashad Evans and what he was trying to do and how he just never seemed to get out of, like, pretty much neutral. It looked like he was stuck in neutral the whole time. I will say, I mean, I thought Rogério, I mean, he did well, and I do think he won the fight. I just, it's hard to say what's going on with Rashad Evans. If you look at our interview, you know, we talked about how he had to do a lot of soul searching, and it sounded like he was really burnt out and really drained after he lost to John Jones. And he couldn't get the title back, and he needed to do a lot of soul searching.
Here's my thoughts. He played it very safe a year ago when he took on Phil Davis. Granted, he won, and he won dominantly, but I still felt like he was protecting himself because he knew that shortly after that he'd be fighting John Jones. And then he gave it, I think, everything he had against John Jones, and he lost decisively. I feel like, again, It was the same but worse, where he felt like he should have gotten an easy win over Little Nog, so he played it safe, and he didn't want to get himself hurt for a potential fight this summer with Anderson Silva. And instead of winning dominantly, things just fell apart for him. You know, it's funny, you used the word neutral there. He couldn't shift out of neutral. I think mentally it was almost like he was defeated before he ever entered the cage. It was, I'm just going to coast through this fight. And when the guy wouldn't give, the guy wouldn't just, you know, fold, with under him coasting, he couldn't self-correct.
I don't know what was on Rashad Evans' mind. I can't speak of that. I do get the feeling, though, that maybe his heart isn't in it, and maybe he's not as hungry as he said he was going into this fight and is excited. So there's that. Maybe he was trying to protect himself and save himself for the fight, and maybe that was hanging over his head, and maybe it was the wrong thing to start talking about a fight with him and Silva. But man, I just don't know. It really annoys me when you see guys, they're just padding mitts, and they're not punching, they're not fighting. I think we see that happen where guys are just sort of tentative and they're hesitant to engage, and they're just touching their fists together like Dana White, basically, like they're playing patty cake, and I just don't get it. And I was able to hear his corner with my radio. His corner just didn't seem to be there for him either. And I wonder what the hell is going on with the Black Zillion that they're not telling him to, you know, step it up, to correct things, and because, you know, you just lost that round to Rogerio Nogueira, and if you don't come back and look really awesome in this next round, you're going to lose the fight. I just don't understand what was going on with his corner and why they weren't coaching him, really.
Yeah, it just, the whole thing just fell flat. Honestly, I mean, if Rashad Evans wants to fight, I'm sure they can match him up with. I mean, at this point, he's kind of where Tito Ortiz was a year ago. You're nowhere near a title shot, and there's not much we can do for you in that vein. But we can put you in marquee fights with other named guys, you know, on a Fox card or whatever. And well, you know, or if you just want to sit, or if you want to be Brian Stann and just sit at the desk and do commentary for Fuel and FX, that's fine too. You know, Rashad Evans is sort of a made man in under the Zuffa umbrella, and so if he doesn't want to fight, he doesn't have to. And if he does want to fight, you know, he can just fight other name guys and be done with it. But I think at this point, unless he sort of reinvents himself at middleweight and works from the ground up, I think, like I said,
well,
Rashad Evans
I mean,
is the new Tito Ortiz.
Without a doubt, he's out of the top five now. I think. You know, maybe you can put him in there in marquee fights, you know, with other guys who are having similar issues right now. Maybe you can put him in there with Shogun or something just to have, you know, you have two big former champions. You can put that on, you can put that as a main event on, say, not a main event, or as a co-main event to get, you know, casual fans interested on a Fox card. Or maybe he doesn't want to fight anymore and maybe he wants to take an analyst seat, but ultimately, that's up to Rashad Evans, and I think, I imagine Samer Cotty is going to get upset that Dana White called his performance terrible last night, but it wasn't a good performance at all.
I like Glover Teixeira against Little Nog next. Dana White, for some odd reason, at the post-fight scrum, indicated they don't have anything lined up for Brazil next, except that if you look at and the Wikipedia page is mostly right. Sometimes they have to correct it. But right now there's a TBA announced for May in Brasilia, Brazil. I don't know if that's the Ultimate Fighter Brazil finale. I don't know if it's the next Brazilian pay-per-view. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it. But they've got a venue, and they just need apparently a date and a card.
Whatever they're doing in May,
I like Glover Teixeira versus Little Nog for that event, whatever it is.
Oh, okay. I think that's possible. Glover Teixeira versus Lil Nog. I guess that could work because I mean this was a huge win for Nogueira and Glover Teixeira after getting a big win over Rampage. He's up there as well. So I guess that is a feasible fight at this point.
You know, if it ends up being an FX event like they just did in January and it's the Ultimate Fighter Brazil finale, I like the Nogs versus Werdum and Teixeira as your main and co-main with the actual Ultimate Fighter final, and that, you know, that makes for, I think, a fun television card. If they end up he seems to insisted that Silva's not going to fight in Brazil for his next fight. Though you put those two with Silva and Weidman in Brazil, and I think you've got money.
I agree. Maybe, you know, I don't think that's a good pay-per-view card, but for TV, I think that's perfect.
Right. Well, no, if you throw Silva at the top of it, then it's fine for pay-per-view.
There you go. Anderson Silva, then yes.
Yeah. And let's quick talk about that. That it fits nicely into this conversation we're having. So, again, Rashad Evans was the anointed one, and he tripped and fell, and he blew it. So forget about Rashad Evans. The only one left standing in the middleweight division at this point, I mean, he threw Kung Lee out there, but that might have been a red herring. The only one left, Chris Weidman, and during the scrum, Dana White said, yeah, Chris Weidman's probably it. We have to go back and talk to everybody. So we may be getting Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman next, but I would not bet money against seeing Anderson Silva versus Kung Lee instead, just because that's the way the UFC seems to work these days. I don't know. He jokingly said Anderson Silva wants to fight Mighty Mouse. I know he was being very sarcastic when he said it, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see that happen either.
Mark, I really get the sense from Dana White that we're not going to see Kung Lee versus Anderson Silva, so I think we can eliminate that possibility.
I hope so. It was just such a stupid fight, you know. But, you know, Chris Weidman, after I think the last time he fought was August. He was out with a shoulder injury. He was supposed to fight this past December. He may be coming back immediately into a title fight. And, you know, good. He more or less deserves it since everyone else has been eliminated. The only other thing that I would suggest is if Anderson Silva doesn't want to fight this summer and he wants to wait a little while longer, if they don't want to do Vitor Belfort, Luke Rockhold, which is what they seem to be working on, do Vitor Belfort versus Chris Weidman, and the winner of that fight gets Anderson Silva. I wouldn't mind seeing Vitor Belfort go a second time with him if he gets another serious win over in the middleweight division. It's more believable if he does it over Weidman than if he does it over Rockhold. But you know, then again, maybe they'll turn a corner on Rockhold now and pull him out of the fight with Belfort and just throw him against Silva.
Belfort is probably going to fight Luke Rockhold next. He was actually in attendance at the event last night. He was getting a lot of attention. You know, everyone's like in love with him. And the other news is there was rumors going around on the Twitterverse and the blogosphere that a fighter tested positive for PEDs at UFC on FX7 from Brazil.
Not Vitor Belfort, according to Dana White.
Hold on. Now, of course, yeah, because of all the, you know, the rumors of TRT for Vitor Belfort and his avoidance with that issue, and he has a record of testing positive for steroids before, everyone assumed it was Vitor Belfort. According to Dana White, the guy who was flagged and who they are retesting, it is not Vitor Belfort, and it is someone else, and we are going to find out who it is on Monday. I have no idea who it is. You know, I guess take a guess, but apparently it's not Belfort. So I guess that means we are probably going to see Belfort versus Luke Rockhold coming up. And who knows? You know, I think, you know, if he continues the road he's on, I wouldn't mind seeing him go for another a title shot because he took out Bisping and he's looked good at middleweight, provided, you know, he does test clean and everything's right there. But go ahead, Mark.
And speaking of Black Zillions who couldn't get it out of neutral last night.
All right. Are we going to the heavyweight fight? Oh, yeah.
Let me say this much. I said on Facebook yesterday, and obviously I was joking when I said it. I said, you know, my wife had asked me if I was covering the show. I said, no, you were there live, so you'd be doing it. And she was like, oh, good, you can just watch and have fun. And I'm like, well, you know, during the Silva Overeem fight, you know, I'm going to just strip naked and set a fire, and you know, and just enjoy it in absolute warrior silence. And you know, she joked back with me and everything, and it became kind of a running gag on Facebook amongst my friends. And I really was. I was excited for this fight. I like both of these guys. We used to, when my wife was pregnant and we noticed that my kid apparently had really big feet in the womb, we were calling her Bigfoot, so my wife's got a sentimental attachment to him. That's really it there. But I was excited to see Overeem back. It was sort of a foregone conclusion that Overeem would open up and KO Silva. You know, if Silva can be KO'd by Dan Cormier, there's no reason why he couldn't have been KO'd by Alistair Overeem. And it was all but set in stone that we'd be getting Cain versus Overeem this summer. Well, again, that's sort of, I guess, the fun of MMA is you never know how a fighter is going to show up. And despite the dancing to the Jonas Brothers and, you know, looking good and everything else and working on his wrestling and being in a Black Zillion and all of that, Alistair Overeem, for some odd reason, decided not to kickbox with Antonio Silva. They clinched a lot. It was an ugly fight to watch. And then when Silva finally opened up, we saw the Alistair Overeem we've really come to know and love, one who under the weight of vicious punches, the same punches that blinded Fedor Emelianenko a few years ago, knocked him clean stupid. And now the UFC heavyweight division is in utter chaos once again.
Yeah, I mean, it was so bizarre. I mean, going into this weekend, Overeem was looking like a bona fide superstar. He had this aura about him. Even after all, you know, everything that had transpired, people were pumped to see Alistair Overeem fight again in the UFC. And he just says all this crazy stuff. I mean, in the pre-fight video package, he said Bigfoot is nothing but a moving target. And he, you know, it got heated with him and Bigfoot. The game plan, I don't know what was Overeem's game plan, but, I mean, he was way too confident, way too arrogant in that fight. He was putting his hands down the whole time like he thought he was Fedor. But this was basically the old Overeem coming back. This is the same thing that would happen with Overeem in fights against Shogun and Chuck Liddell and so many other guys back in the Pride days. He would look good, and he would be beating a guy up, and then he'd suddenly get knocked out. I don't know if he just has a lack of cardio in the later rounds, but I mean, it was a failing game plan. He did win the first two rounds, yes, but you can't let a guy like Bigfoot just punch you, because Bigfoot.
No, you cannot. Hang on, Jeff. Let me interrupt you there real quick. I didn't realize this because I've been staring at the card and hadn't been looking at the switchboard. But we do have a caller. Area code 801. You are on the 401 Ground and Pound radio show. Sorry for the long hold. What's your question or comment?
Oh, it's been too long. You forgot what area code I come from, Mark.
Oh, it's our good friend E.R. Winfrey. How you doing, Robert?
Management. Oh, not too bad.
We were just, you've heard the show so far. We were just talking about the Silva-Overeem fight. Now, you're not like me, from what I remember. You were not obsessed with the heavyweights. What was your impressions of that fight last night?
Alistair, yeah, exactly. Overeem is way too passive a fighter.
Did this not remind you of his performance against Fabricio Werdum 2, where he just kind of sat and waited instead of fighting aggressively, and then this was worse, but then gets caught and you're like, how did that happen?
Well, I know how it happened. He gassed out. He had his hands down, and Bigfoot Silva has fists the size of normal people's heads. I mean, he got really tired for some reason, considering the lack of general activity. He was not engaging in any kind of kickboxing. I mean, he didn't throw but, like, what, two leg kicks? And he's got serious power in his legs and knees. He wasn't actively punching. He wasn't doing much of anything. And then his hands were down. He was backed against the cage. He was kind of tired. And then Bigfoot Silva just unloaded and knocked him stupid.
Yeah. The only upside to that entire fight, well, I mean, on the downside, it completely throws the heavyweight title picture on its head. We'll get to that in a moment. On the downside, it gives us another opportunity for JDS versus Alistair Overeem, a fight that I was really looking forward to. And okay, so this is kind of like when Anderson Silva finally, when Chuck Liddell rather finally fought Wanderlei Silva. Sure, there's no title on the line. It's a little too late, but we still want to see it anyway. So I'm hoping, though, Junior Dos Santos is now saying, okay, me next. Everyone else has eliminated themselves. I want to fight next. And I don't want to see that fight just yet. I'd like to see Junior Dos Santos win a fight again before he goes back in the cage with Kane. So, you know, as a get-well fight for either guy, I'd like to see JDS versus Alistair Overeem. Jeff, I cut you off in your analysis, so just finish up your point.
Oh, I mean, you know, Overeem, he did win the first two rounds, but, you know, just like Winfrey said, he gassed out and he was keeping his hands down, and when you let a guy like Bigfoot hit you, that is not a smart move, because he is a slow sort of lumbering heavyweight, but he still hits very hard. And again, mystified by the coaching of the Black Zillions and what was going on with the Black Zillions, you know, not properly coaching their guys. My belief is that the Black Zillions is a failing MMA camp.
They're surpassing Team Alpha Male in terms of being nicknamed Team Entitled. I Rashad Evans and Alistair Overeem seem to have been of the same mindset last night. Get this night over with. We have bigger things. We have bigger fish to fry. We have bigger things to do. And they didn't take their opponent seriously, and they lost because of it. That's my feeling, especially with this one. This one was huge, because you're right. He coasted for the first two rounds. I was telling everybody, I'm like, if this isn't over by the second round, I'll eat my hat. And my hat tasted terrible last night. I couldn't believe he dragged this into the third round, when I feel like he could have finished him well before that. But he was content to coast, ride a decision, and, you know, and fight Kane as soon as possible. And I tell you, if that's the case, if I'm right about in the case with Rashad and Alistair Overeem, that's a shitty attitude to have. B, I hope people learn from this that you can't protect yourself because you've got a title shot on deck. You have to fight like it's your last fight. What do you think about that, Robert?
I agree with you. It, you know, I was really happy when Overeem got knocked out. I mentioned it on Twitter. You know, I was hoping to see Overeem and Kane because that's a fight that we all kind of wanted to see. But watching his interviews and his and the pre-fight hype package and whatnot, for him to just kind of sit there with his arms crossed and laying back in his chair like, no, I don't have a care in the world, when you're about to get into the cage with a very large, very angry man, is just not the right attitude to take towards that. So when the cockiness got knocked out of him along with most of his senses, it was a very nice moment for part of me that says, you know, you shouldn't be that overconfident.
Now, I mean, let me be clear. It was a fun knockout, and it was great to see Overeem get knocked out and, you know, see an underdog like Bigfoot win. But, yeah, it does put the division into chaos, Mark, but Dana White almost sounded reticent to the idea of maybe this is enough for Bigfoot to get a rematch with Cain Velasquez. I'm not necessarily saying that's what they're going to do, but, you know, you got to acknowledge this is a huge win for Bigfoot. Even though just some months back he got destroyed by Cain Velasquez.
It was about 8 months ago that Cain Velasquez left him in a pool of his own blood in the first round. If Junior Dos Santos, after surviving five rounds and going to a decision, doesn't get an immediate rematch, I don't see why an accidental victory over Travis Brown and a third round knockout over Overeem all automatically brings him up there. I would rather see the winner of Mark Hunt, Stefan Struve, fight Bigfoot Silva for a number one contendership. And that fight happens next month in March in Japan. I like Stefan Struve versus Bigfoot Silva. I think that's a fun fight. He just needs to get past Mark Hunt. And if Mark Hunt somehow knocks out good old Spaghetti Legs, then, you know, that still is a fun fight, and we'll finally get the rally for Hunt we've all been waiting for. In the meantime,
somehow.
Say what?
Mark Hunt's going to knock him out.
I hope so. I would love to see Mark Hunt make a run at the title. I think that would be hilarious and fun. And Dana White would probably have to start taking Haldol, which I also think would be funny. But, you know, getting back to what do you do with the heavyweight title, depends on when Cain Velasquez wants to fight, depends on who's available. And Dan Cormier's got a fight with Frank Mir, and I know that Dan Cormier's his wrestling coach and all of that, but last night Dana White had also said, they never said they wouldn't fight each other, they just don't want to. Maybe if you throw enough money at both of these guys and say, look, you're all that's left, you make that fight happen anyway. And honestly, if Dan Cormier beats Frank Mir, it's the only guy left right now who isn't on a losing streak that actually deserves a title shot. That said, I think they should bring in Bob Sapp. What do you think, Jeff?
I think Bob Sapp is a horrible idea, Mark, and I think you should be banned from the show for saying that. I mean, I want to see Daniel Cormier fight in heavyweight for the heavyweight title. At the same time, can we really believe these guys will really fight each other when they wouldn't stop hugging each other just last December? It's just I want to see Cormier at heavyweight. I'm not keen on the idea of him making a light heavyweight cut. It's just tough for me to see these two fight each other seeing how close they are. It's just hard. Can they really go along with that, and will they really be okay with it, and will the fight still be good? I'm just not sure.
They're close to signing Josh Barnett, but Josh Barnett's also 1-1 in his last two fights. He's got a loss to Cormier, and Cormier, that put, you know, it would not make any sense at all. It makes sense from a star power point of view to put Josh Barnett in there, especially if Cormier doesn't want the fight. But it doesn't make any sense from a rankings point of view. And let's be clear, looking at the calendar, after Struve versus Hunt, you got nothing until April. Nothing. There are no big time heavyweight fights lined up where you could say, okay, well, maybe the winner of that fight. Struve and Hunt is it. Because the next time you see anybody at heavyweight that's worth a damn is in April, and that's Chuck Congo versus Roy Nelson. Again, you really can't make either one of them. And you know, maybe Roy Nelson if he wins that one. He's got enough wins now, you could probably make a case. But not Cup Chuck Congo, not in this lifetime. So so they've got to figure something out. And it all really depends on Cain Velasquez, because when I start thinking about, like, when I do the fantasy booking thing and I start thinking about, like, who should be next in line, I'm always thinking 3 or 4 months out. Cain fought in December. He should conceivably fight in May or June. That gives him 5 to 6 months from his last fight. Given the time frame, like I said, Cormier fights in April, which makes the earliest he could, you know, turn around would be June, July. That's why this loss of Overeem's damages the divisions so much, is the time just doesn't work out to get Velasquez in there with somebody decent when he should be fighting again. Robert, any last thoughts on the fight itself or what to do with this guy?
Well, before they go for Bob Sapp, they could probably get Soa the Hulk to do it, and I'd rather see that than Bob Sapp.
All right. Jeff, any last words on this?
Scott Ferozzo.
Who?
Scott Ferozzo.
Tank Abbott.
There we go. I would pay money to see Cain Velasquez versus Tank Abbott.
There you go, right? There you go. I mean, Mark, you watch so much MMA and you review so much MMA for us. I can only I have to trust your opinion and your judgment on this.
All right. So, Damian Maia, my wife said something really funny last night, and I retweeted it. I don't know if you saw it, Robert. She said, "Wow, Johnny Hendricks knocked out John Fitch so bad he forgot how to grapple."
Yeah, I saw that. That was amusing.
I don't know what the hell happened in that first round, but literally John Fitch forgot how to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and that's about all I can come up with. Your thoughts, Robert?
I think it was more John. There's a couple of these wrestlers in the UFC that I don't know what it is with them, but it seems like they just don't have defensive wrestling. I mean, there's John Fitch. There's a couple of other ones, and they're in a couple of different divisions, but they're very good offensively. But if they get taken down, you know, they have a hard time stopping takedowns, and they don't seem to know what to do if they are taken down. And well, the difference with Fitch is he generally does. He tends to give up his back so he could turn in and wind up in your guard and be on top. But Damian Maia is big enough to get a body triangle on him, and you have a much harder time turning into that than you do standard hooks. And he couldn't turn into him. And Damian Maia has, you know, good back control and is just, you know, on the ground. He's got to be. You know, I hate to do equivalencies, but he is, you know, so good on the ground, and it's kind of amazing that Fitch actually survived all three rounds, despite being, you know, back mounted for most of it.
He's got a neck made of tractor tires.
He's got to. I mean, that was crazy to see, you know, Damian Maia sit there and almost get the choke, and he's still somehow managing to defend it. I mean, he got no offense in over, like, the course of the entire 15 minutes, but
I scored that first round 10-8. Apparently, the judges thought that was a 10-9 round. And, you know, my rule of thumb, when you have absolutely no offense and you're damn near finished for the entire 5 minutes, 10-8. I can't go 10-9 there. But they did 30-27 there for some odd reason. Reluctant to do a 10-8 for that. Jeff, what was the air around you like for that match? What did people around you say, what was your feeling about their reactions?
It was the most satisfying John Fitch fight in the history of MMA.
Okay.
It was not the most exciting fight, but definitely the most satisfying. We were talking about, this is what John Fitch does to his opponents in the UFC. This is generally what a John Fitch fight will go like for John Fitch. And Dana White said it, John Fitch, he got fitched last night.
He got his comeuppance.
Crazy. And I don't know what it is about John Fitch, but like Winfrey said, he just doesn't seem to respond well when he's put on his back. I mean, his big excuse, and the big excuse for AKA, from AKA for the BJ Penn fight, was that they were surprised. They didn't think BJ Penn was going to try and wrestle with him. Well, I mean, come on. You practice wrestling and guys taking you down and putting you on your back. Man, thank you, Damian Maia, for showing another wrinkle in Fitch's game. I don't hate John Fitch, but I think he, for a long time, he's been a pretty one-dimensional fighter. He does his striking well enough to set up his takedowns and do what he wants to do, but I just think he got too complacent and too comfortable in his role as sort of like the grind machine of the welterweight division. And I think he had too much of a chip on his shoulder, believing he was truly the second best welterweight in the world, and the only guy that could beat him was GSP. I mean, GSP out wrestled him, so there's that too. But it's the most satisfying John Fitch fight I've ever seen. And congrats to Damian Maia, without a doubt, one of the top five guys in welterweight right now with this current win streak. He looks like a brand new.
Yeah, I would predict that Damian Maia, depending on what happens after Silva, after GSP Diaz, there's still a hint, though I don't believe it, there's still a hint or so out there that after the Diaz fight, GSP will go ahead and put the weight on and go and do the Silva fight, which means either dropping the title into vacancy or putting it on hold. In either case, I don't believe Johnny Hendricks will ever fight GSP for the title. I just think that that's his cross to bear. I think they'll make Johnny Hendricks. I know Johnny Hendricks has Jake Ellenberger in March, but I think he should beat Ellenberger pretty easily. And I like Johnny Hendricks versus Damian Maia next. Robert, your thoughts on the fight and what to do with Maia?
Well, he looked really good last night. He looked like a beast. I forgot how much bigger he is than a lot of those other guys at welterweight, because you get so used to seeing him at middleweight where he's not the biggest guy, and then you see him in there and he's actually wider and a bit taller than John Fitch, and he could make a run at the belt. And, you know, assuming Hendricks, depending on what happens with GSP and Diaz, if GSP wins, which he should, and if Johnny Hendricks wins, and if GSP doesn't want to fight Silva, which seems to be his narrative, I don't want to get knocked out by Anderson Silva in the first round, because that's most likely what will happen. give Damian Maia one more fight against a top higher level guy. You know, he could easily fight even just a guy with kind of a name. I mean, he could fight Josh Koscheck for all I care. And then
I like Damian Maia as a contender for the welterweight title. It's just how do you get there? You know, this is sort of the underpants gnomes here. You know, Damian Maia, welterweight contender, Damian Maia profit. That middle step is a bit murky right now. I guess we'll we can further this conversation along after March 16th when GSP takes on Nick Diaz and gets the beating of a lifetime.
I think let's see what happens in March at UFC 158, and then we'll have a more clear picture of the welterweight division and where guys stand after that, and probably who the next matchup for Damian Maia could be.
Agreed. So the night started off on the pay-per-view broadcast with a flyweight losers bracket of sorts. It was Joseph Benavidez versus Ian McCall. I love this fight. I know Jeff and I sort of talked about it before the show started off air. There's a lot of negative energy being directed at the lower weight classes for a variety of reasons. People think they look like midgets, children, dwarfs, Morlocks, whatever, and they don't like it. They like bigger guys. They don't tend to finish fights, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think you can knock this fight. It went back and forth. It was all over the place. Both guys gave 110%. A couple of times Ian McCall looked like he could have pulled out the victory. Looks like Benavidez once or twice looked like he was going to knock him out. I had no qualms with this, and I have no qualms with giving Joseph Benavidez another shot at Mighty Mouse in a couple of months. Robert?
I think the biggest problem with the 125 weight division right now is there's, six fighters in it.
Well, yeah, they either need to hire more staffers to go do recruiting, or they need to focus on it. One of the two. I don't know. Again, I don't work there, so I don't know how many people they've got to do that sort of thing. But you know, it's been a year now almost. It'll be a year in March that they started this, and you're right. They cut a guy, so it's like five fighters.
Yeah, that's my biggest gripe with it right now. You know, they do have a lot of action and that goes on and whatnot. But as for this fight, I was a little disappointed in Ian McCall in some ways because, you know, he's got strong counter wrestling and he works good from the clinch. So you know, Joseph Benavidez outstruck him that fight pretty much. He didn't get taken down and smashed from there. He didn't get caught up in a wild grappling exchange. I mean, the one time the fight wound up on the ground, Ian McCall was on top for most of it. But he just never was able to really land any decent strike. I don't know what – he's another fighter kind of like John Fitch and Frankie Edgar in that, you know, it seems like they need to do something different than what they've been doing. You know, it's good, and he's clearly one of the best in the division in the world, but it's just not getting him over that hump. And you know, that's not necessarily as true of Frankie Edgar because he's been at the top for so long, but – I don't know if he needs to dedicate himself to his striking because he was in a bunch of striking exchanges and he couldn't seem to land, you know, really hard shots to Joseph Benavidez, and he was getting clipped with them several times. I mean, I know he always comes out and he smiles real big and he kind of dances around because, you know, apparently he can't be knocked out, but you know, you get hit like that and if you can't return the favor, then you're losing the round, and he just kind of, you know, got overwhelmed in that sense, and he just couldn't seem to get on track to actually do anything substantial against Joseph Benavidez. And, yeah, Benavidez probably gets another title shot because he's the only guy there, and his last fight with Mighty Mouse apparently was a split decision, which is kind of crazy because I thought Mighty Mouse owned that fight. But
I predict Frankie Edgar drops to flyweight and gets an immediate title shot. Go ahead, Jeff.
I thought it was a good fight, but I was constantly frustrated with Ian McCall in just how, you know, he seemed a little too happy to be in there, and I just don't understand why he was smiling and so happy when I saw it that he was losing the fight and getting beat up, and I felt like he was either overmatched or he just couldn't turn it on. I mean, I know. It just always seems there's some sort of mental block for Ian McCall, for Uncle Creepy. He's got some personal problems or some personal demons that affect him going in. I don't know. I was just frustrated with how, you know, dude, you're in a fight. This guy's hitting you. Why are you smiling and so happy about it? I'm just confused. But good win for Joseph Benavidez. The word is that he apparently doesn't want the title fight yet. I think he actually wants another fight first. Maybe put him in there with John Moraga, who's won his last two fights at flyweight in the UFC.
Yep. I'm hoping their trip to Mexico produced some guys that they can bring in right away at 125. I know that the Mexico in 115 was what was associated with one another, but they're not doing it now. They're not doing it for a little while yet. Oh. So in the meantime, they can get some 125ers in there.
And by the way, for Winfrey, there are 13 guys in flyweight at the UFC, not six. 13.
Oh, good. Good.
How many of them are waiting on their debut?
What was that?
How many of them are waiting on their debut?
None of them. All of them have debuted.
Takes time though. When we can't name beyond the first five or six guys. Without having to look it up on Wikipedia, they're all going to need a couple of fights before we start talking title shot with anybody. It was the same thing with bantamweight. All right, so speaking of the lighter weight classes, the prelim card. Now, what we do here at this part of the show, we don't go through them one by one. It's just kind of your best of what you think of this and that. Although Dennis Kimura, despite the fact that he didn't make the bantamweight limit, look like $1 million, didn't win by Kimura, though. That was disappointing. Tyrone Effin Woodley. Holy crap. I don't know what the hell Jay Heron ever did to this guy, but I thought Jay Heron was dead. Minute, what do you call it? One first round, 36 seconds. I think to continue John Fitch's descent into hell, he should have to fight Tyrone Woodley next. The Dunham Gleason-Tebow fight was really hard to judge, even harder because I wasn't paying that close attention. Bobby Green was apparently on a two-on-one fight against Jacob Volkman and Kim Winslow. Holy crap, worst stand-up ever. And good for Isaac Valley Flag. Apparently the Strikeforce fighters are doing quite well in their UFC runs. And that's my best of. Jeff, your best of the prelims.
It was the story of the prelims was, you know, the Strikeforce guys united, Strikeforce victorious on the prelims. Tyron Woodley, wow, what a knockout. You know, you can't complain about that performance from Tyron Woodley. He shut up a lot of his haters there. Bobby Green, he is no longer hood-style Bobby Green. He is now poetry in motion Bobby Green, and that is what he wants to be referred to now as. He's done with hood-style. He does not want to be referred to as hood-style anymore. Man, I thought what happened in the first round of that fight was going to happen the whole fight. But he turned things around when he got that well-placed knee strike on Volkman when he shot him for the takedown. And then he was beating him up on the ground, and the incompetent, consistently inconsistent Kim Winslow stands them up when Bobby Green has him hurt on the ground and is ground and pounding him and using elbows and punches, and she stands them up. Unbelievable. It was a handicap match. Bobby Green was in a handicap match against the incompetent referee Kim Winslow and Jacob Volkman, and he still finished the fight and won by submission. So good job, Bobby Green, in being and not falling apart due to the incompetence of an idiotic ref. Cecil Peoples let a guy tap out and let the fight continue, and that guy lost the fight. So, you know, good on you for not falling apart to horrible refereeing, Bobby Green, now called Poetry in Motion.
You know, I feel like Kim Winslow wasn't paying attention to the fight. She was just listening to the fans. And, you know, there's always guys in the audience that no matter what is happening, no matter, you know, what level of jiu-jitsu is going on, will just yell, "Stand him up!" You know, and that was going on with her. It was, "I'm bored. Get up." Because either that or she thought this was kickboxing.
People knew that was a shit stand-up. People were booing it.
I know. I saw. They were ready to burn the cage down with her in it, man. I saw. But my point is, I don't understand her rationale other than maybe she got bored and decided they needed to stand up, or she thought it was a kickboxing fight.
What's upsetting to me is, you know, we see these fights where guys are just being so lackadaisical on the ground, and they're just not doing anything, and the referee doesn't do anything. And yet, in this fight, you have a guy who's actually doing damage and being active on the ground, and she immediately stands him up. I'm mystified what is going on here. And if I'm an NSAC official, I'm asking, okay, what is going on here? This was clearly not a good stand-up. What was your rationale for standing them up here? You need an answer for this, and you need to explain yourself, and we're going to demote you and put you on just these lower cards for a while before you can prove you're not going to make a mistake like that again.
Yeah, she needs to go work some legacy fighting championships for a while.
Exactly. There needs to be oversight here, Mark. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're right. Robert, your best of the prelims.
Let's see. I was a little surprised that the Gleason-Tebow-Evan Dunham fight went to a split decision. I thought that was a bit clearer in the favor of Dunham. Yeah, Tyron Woodley, man, if that guy is actually ready to learn striking and learn how to strike, then he could be a force because he's got strong wrestling. He's got some power in his hands. If he's ready to, you know, evolve as a fighter from just, "I'm going to take you down and smother you without doing anything," like Clay Guida, then he could be up there. He could be scary because, man, he just almost killed Jay Heron is what it looked like. I mean, that was...
His toes were curled like the Wicked Witch of the East after the house got dropped on her.
Yeah, that was... He probably made the best impression of
Jay Heron
in 2007.
What was that, Jeff?
Jay Haran has not been finished in like almost 6 years.
Yeah, well, last night he took a trip to the hospital, him and Frankie Edgar. All right, so I want to make sure this got on air. We're going to take a brief break here and listen to Jeff Harris's exclusive interview with Damian Maya, and then we'll go ahead and move on to the last part of the show, which will be some quick thoughts about the last Bellator card from this past Thursday night. So here it is, Jeff Harris, reporter on the scene, live with Damian, I Just Killed You, John Fitch, Maya.
Sincere. Congratulations tonight, Jeffrey Harris, post-fight UFC 156, speaking with big winner, big underdog tonight, Damian Maya, got his third win at welterweight and beat one of the top contenders at welterweight in John Fitch. How satisfying was that win to not just beat John Fitch, but absolutely dominate him like no one else has before?
It was great, you know, it was great because, like you said, he was one of the top contenders, and the only time that I saw him being dominated was against GSP, and GSP is GSP, and so it gives me a lot of confidence that you know, I'm in the right division, and also I'm doing the right training program.
You look like a brand new fighter at welterweight. Do you feel like a new fighter?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it's like a reborn for me, this weight division.
How comfortable are you with the weight cut now? Because it doesn't look like it's affecting you at all.
No, especially this time, you know, after the first two times. First time was kind of weird because I didn't know well. Second time was better, and this time was the best one. I don't feel weak or nothing. I feel the same strength, and also more stamina because, you know, I have less weight.
Welterweight is an interesting picture right now. So you just beat one of the top guys, but now everyone's got fights lined up. GSP, he's lined up to fight Nick Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Johnny Hendricks, Jake Ellenberger. They're all in the mix up toward the top. And then you have the rankings issue. I think with this win and the new rankings coming out, I think you'd absolutely be in the top five. But where do you see yourself right now?
I don't know. I need to think well because, like you said, there's many good top welterweights. But, you know, I'm just looking for one thing, and this is the title.
You didn't submit Fitch, but you really dominated. You did tonight what Fitch usually does to most of his opponents.
Uh-huh.
Did you believe you could do what you did tonight?
I trained for that, you know, and of course I didn't have like a crystal ball to see what was going to happen, but I trained to dominate him like that, and I trained to submit him, but was just, you know, not enough. I couldn't, you know, the submit.
Is this the biggest win of your career, do you think?
In this time, I think so. You know, maybe this fight and
or
Chaos
Sonnen
fight. Yeah, these two fights are the biggest ones.
Okay, and last question. Anybody you want to thank or give a shout out to?
Oh, my sponsors, you know, Amazu, Bad Boy, Probiotica, my team. I'm not going to say all the names because a lot of people, and, you know, a big thanks to my manager, Eduardo Alonso, also.
All right, Damian, congratulations in Da Porada.
Thank you. I will.
Thank you very much, Damian.
All right, good job there, Jeff. All right, so that was UFC 156, the super fight card. And, you know, overall, I would say it was a B. The prelims were a lot of fun. All but two finishes, and even the decisions were not boring to watch. The pay-per-view portion of the card, like I said, first two fights I thought were great, a little frustrating for the guys that lost, but great. The heavyweight fight was, I was emotionally invested in Overeem, so that was a hard fight for me to watch. But I can't say I was bored by it. Worst fight of the night to me was Little Nog and Rashad, and then the main event was good. But, I mean, I think if people weren't satisfied, you know, because it didn't end in a finish, that is the downside to high-level MMA, is when you've got guys that are so evenly matched and they bring so much skill to the table, you're not always going to see a finish. They're not going to make the mistakes that allow for it. Your overall thoughts, Robert, 50 words or less.
I think you're right. Probably a B, maybe a B+. If Rashad Evans and Little Nog had actually had any kind of engaging fight, it would have been better.
And Jeff, you know, you were there live. Was it electric, or was it kind of Phantom Midland?
I don't know if I'd say electric. I would give it like a, if I were to give it a grade, I would give it a B+. I enjoyed it. You know, the main event went pretty much how I expected it to go, but it was an exciting back and forth war. We got to see a great, you know, I was really happy with how the underdogs did, because it's always fun and surprising to see the underdogs win. So seeing Overeem get knocked out, seeing Damian Maia do what he did to John Fitch, I like seeing stuff. I like seeing stuff like that. That's what I like about MMA. So definitely enjoyed it last night.
Before we get into Bellator, just one comment, an observation that I noticed last night with regards to the next UFC pay-per-view, which is in 3 weeks, UFC 157, Rousey versus Carmouche. Now, I don't want to, again, we're going to talk about this card at length, and I don't want to get into, again, all the negativity of the particular headline or whatever. Just something about the TV spot. Now, when you saw it later on Fuel, it was shortened and it looked more even-handed. But for God's sakes, that initial showing where they showed the entire thing, there's a good minute or two of just Ronda Rousey and her name doing different things, showing her name or whatever, and then they finally mention that she's fighting Liz Carmouche. And I understand the big draw here is supposed to be Ronda Rousey, but it just seemed to fly in the face of logic, where you want to sell the fight as competitive. And it made it seem like, come see the Ronda Rousey experience and Liz Carmouche. I don't know. I had an odd reaction to it. And everybody that's in my house, so I wasn't alone here, who saw that spot was like, they didn't even notice they showed her opponent. I at least was waiting for some mention of this poor woman. Robert, did you notice that too? Did you even know what I was talking about? Or did you happen to miss that the TV spot?
You know, I did miss it, but, you know, make no mistake about it, that whole thing is the Ronda Rousey show. I mean, I get what you're saying about they need to promote her opponent so that if she does lose, because this is MMA, it's not just, you know, you want to get, like, at least some people who were there to see Ronda interested in the sport or her opponent or whatnot, but, you know, this whole thing is come about just because of Ronda Rousey, and, you know, pretending otherwise is a bit disingenuous in a lot of ways. I mean, you don't want to say Liz Carmouche is just there to lose. You know, you don't want to say that because she could win just because it's MMA, but, you know, she's the one you need to hype up for this, and, you know, you need to do a good job of accentuating her opponent, but, you know, for a first-run TV spot, you know, it wasn't good, but you know, it could have been worse.
Jeff, your reaction to the TV spot?
I only saw it in passing. I never got a really good look at it, so I'd have to see it again. You know, a lot of haters, a lot of crap talkers about UFC 157, but I'm just going to tell you this. We did not get approved for that fight just because of UFC being inundated with so many, you know, outlets that don't even have any interest in MMA. This fight is going to get a lot of attention, be it positive or not, and a lot of people that never do MMA are doing MMA just for Ronda Rousey. There are huge guys in the sport who have never been in the things that Ronda Rousey is getting right now. Now,
right.
I'm just saying, that's how excited and pumped people are about just about Ronda Rousey. And, I mean, it could have been Gina Carano. I think Dana White was willing to bring in Gina Carano and have her fight in the UFC, but that didn't pan out. To me, this is an experiment, and if it fails, it fails. I don't think it's going to make or break the UFC. I don't think it's going to break the UFC if it does fail. And I think, to me, that's no reason not to try it. I like women's MMA. I want to see where this can go, so we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about any of that. If you didn't see the spot, it's hard to comment on it, and I understand that, so I'm not going to take up too much time with this. It just, it very much felt like, hey, here's Ronda Rousey. Come look at Ronda Rousey. Feed the Ronda Rousey. Take pictures of the Ronda Rousey. Liz Carmouche. Ronda Rousey. And Lyoto Machida and Dan Henderson.
I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. She was on the – I mean, she's the only MMA fighter last year who made the best athletes of the year for Sports Illustrated. She made the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine. It makes sense to market the event around her.
The television spot shouldn't almost have left out her opponent. It's an aesthetic thing, Jeff.
TV
it felt out of balance.
It is a TV spot. Once it gets closer to the event, they're going to do the countdown thing. They're going to do the prime time.
I'm not criticizing them for botching the promotion. They haven't had an opportunity to botch it yet. We haven't gotten there. I'm saying it was an observation of this spot. All right, that was all I was bringing up. Let everybody relax. So the next time the UFC will be having an event is in 2 weeks on Fuel. Looks like in the middle of the day, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe, 11 a.m. Pacific. Interim bantamweight title holder Henan Barão versus Michael McDonald. Co-headliner is Cub Swanson versus Dustin Poirier. So we'll talk about that next Sunday night at 9 o'clock, our new time for this show. Let's talk about the only other event that mattered this week, and that was Bellator 87. I did the live coverage of that. It was the lightweight tournament quarterfinals. Did either of you guys get a chance to watch this?
I watched a little bit of it.
Robert?
I got to catch a little bit of it. I didn't wind up paying as much attention as maybe I should have, but I did see it. So if you want to discuss it, I will probably know what you're talking about.
Just
705,000 average viewers for this show for Bellator.
Well, yeah, I kind of wanted to bring this up in the general discussion of Bellator, just a few minutes. So this is the third event that they've done since debuting on Spike. Last week was the complete and utter devastation of Carl Amoosu by the new and improved Funky Ben Askren, and then before that was the two title fights in was that the one the King Mo debuted on, or was that
King Mo debuted last on Bellator 86.
Yeah, so there was something else that was on the first show. But what have you thought, Robert, of Bellator so far since they've debuted on Spike? You think it's better? Better product than what we got on Epix and MTV2, kind of the same with some better production. What have you thought so far?
It's nice to see the better production values come out of them because they have some interesting fighters. They have some good fights that they can make. They have the tournament format, which for all of its flaws, like no elbows on the ground if you're in a tournament fight because we can't have someone get cut, which I think is a tad ridiculous, but if you're going to do a tournament format in that condensed time, you have to do it. They've been stepping it up a little bit. You know, it's more exposure for them. It's a bigger viewership. They have the better production values. The fighters seem to, know that they're on that bigger stage. They've been fighting more entertaining fights. I mean, Ben Askren was actually in a watchable fight, What more can you ask for?
Indeed, it was like winning the lottery. Let's take a brief pause here and go to the phones. Area code 845. You are on the 401 Ground and Pound radio show. What's your comment or question?
Hey, what's up? This is Joey. And, why don't you guys stop wasting your time talking about this stupid sport and talk about a real sport like racquetball or tennis or something? Because this is kind of stupid.
All right. Thanks for calling. So back to Bellator. Dave Rickles went to a decision over Lloyd Cupcake Woodard. Another one of the fighters that gets close and then, trips on a banana peel. Just very frustrating. I keep pulling for Cupcake to win. I keep pulling for Cupcake to win a fight and get further along because I think they could make a star out of him, at least for Bellator, and we never quite get there. For Rickles, I had it 29-28, as did all the judges for Rickles, and he moves on. Will Brooks won by unanimous decision all three rounds, though I gave the first round to Trelawney. Unanimous decision there. So Patricky Pitbull ended up being injured at the last second. He couldn't make the show, so he got replaced by Saad Awad, who done wrecked Guillermo Di Lorenzi. 31 seconds into round one, just obliterated this guy. And the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. Alexander Sarnovsky defeated Thiago Michel. So pretty good. Robert or Jeff, I'll go to Jeff first. From what you were able to see and what ended up being the results of the quarterfinals, who looks like the favorite now to win this thing in your eyes?
Probably I would say Will Brooks or David Rickles, but we'll see. You know, I like Bellator being on Spike TV, and I like being able to watch in HD now, and good production values and all that. I think they need to take advantage maybe of YouTube streaming a little more and getting more videos onto YouTube. And the other thing is, I think, you know, it's one thing to do a show like every week when you're on Fox Sports Net or NTV2, and it doesn't really matter because you're in like a holding pattern and you're building toward Spike TV. But I think we're going to start seeing the perils of, you know, Bellator trying to put like a whole season of TV together every week for an MMA promotion, and it's not going to be easy to do. And we're going to see some of these underwhelming fights. You know, people say we have too many cards in the UFC, but I mean, we're going to see Bellator be dealing with this as well, trying to put a fight card together every week.
It's the Faustian bargain. You know, they have these fighters. I mean, what was Eddie Alvarez's big gripe with Bellator? It was, I'm not getting fights fast enough. That's a lot of people. I mean, I think Christian Mpumbu hasn't even defended his light heavyweight title yet. You know, he had a super fight with Travis Wolf, and then nothing. And it's frustrating. Bellator is an interesting product. It's a novel product, but it's their tournament format, as we discussed at length in the past, has its problems. And one of the problems is you know what you're mentioning. They're committed to their tournament format, but then that fortunately leaves certain fighters who they have signed a contract without fights. Most importantly, their title holders who wouldn't be in the tournament. I was a big fan of just doing away with the championships and just, you know, have, let's say, you know, Ben Askren, for example, start him all over again. You know, if you win the last tournament, you're automatically in the next tournament, and just, you know, defend your reign as the tournament holder. I think that makes it more interesting.
My opinion, Mark, this is just my opinion. I think they need to make it a 4-man tournament. So basically, here's the deal: you win a semifinal, then the finals, and then you fight the champion. You know, to me, that's your tournament. I think, because that's how it was when Bellator started. When you won the divisional tournament, you were the champion. So I think the third fight should really be for the title, honestly, instead of having to go through the whole tournament and then have to wait through that to fight the title. I think that's a little too much, and I think that's what causes, you know, these slow cycles for all the champions. I think to speed things up, I think you need to remove a round of the tournament, make it a 4-man tournament, and then go to the title fight.
Yeah, I would buy into that. I think if you want to keep title holders as title
active
holders and not recommit them to tournaments, that actually is a way to get things moving faster. Robert, any final thoughts on this Bellator or Bellator in general?
I think probably this is going to be the caveman show as far as the tournament goes, and then I don't think it matters because I don't think he can – I'm not entirely sure he could beat Michael Chandler at any rate, so
– Yeah, that's also the other problem here is that you get these guys who win the tournament and then the champions blow them out of the water. All right, Locked in a Guillotine is the column that Robert Winfrey writes for 411. It's a Friday column. What do you got going on this week, Mr. Winfrey?
Well, the big review of the super fight between Frankie Edgar and Jose Aldo, as well as the rest of that card. We're in a spot, so I also discuss any news that comes out during the week. So hopefully whoever tested positive for PEDs at the other fight, I'll know who it is so I can discuss that, whatever else comes out during the week. And since we don't have a card to preview for next week,
No, I will have to preview the next one before my... I'm just getting the timing right straight in my head, but I think I will. I'll wind up... No, I don't think I will. I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. I'll either be previewing that or I'm going to explain... I've had a couple of things that have been bugging me in general about MMA lately, so I'll pick either the guys who choose to fight point fights like Clay Guida, Frankie Edgar, John Fitch, or I'll have a discussion about some of my issues I've taken recently with the jiu-jitsu mindset as far as it concerns with MMA. So either I'm previewing a card or you'll get my thoughts on point fighting or some things that jiu-jitsu needs to adapt to as far as competing in MMA goes.
Right, Robert,
I'd like to read the one
appreciate...
on point fighting, Robert, because we were talking about that earlier with Frankie Edgar, and you know how he said how he seems to always say after these fights, "I thought I did just enough to win."
Ugh, drives me crazy. All right, I want to thank Robert for joining us. It's been a long time. Good friend of the show. It's been a long time since he's been on, and we were glad to have him back today as you know Pat was out. So we'll hope to hear from you soon. Maybe we can get you on a little more often than not now that we're moving to 9 o'clock Sunday night starting a week from today. Again, 9 p.m., same URL, some Blog Talk Radio, everything else. Just the time is changing from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Jeff, what do you got going on this week?
Winslow, you are not going to escape the wrath of the 411mania.com's MMA's 3Rs, so just be ready.
Yeah, worst ref, Kate Winslow or Dan Marigliotta in your eyes? 10 words.
Dan Marigliotta, just because far too many guys are getting hurt or messed up in Dan Marigliotta's fuck-ups. So what else we have going on? If you go to movies right now, you can read my Blu-ray review of Batman The Dark Knight Returns Part 2. New movie review coming up, the new movie Identity Thief, starring Jason Bateman and Melissa McCarthy. Exciting new comedy coming out. You can read my live report from UFC 156 and MMA, and also our exclusive interview with Rashad Evans we got right before his fight with Rogério Nogueira. So that's there if you want to check that out. Of course, please check out this podcast coming up once it's in the archives and up on the site to listen to our interview clip with Damian Maia. And, thank you, Mark, for having me on today. And thank
you
to the
U.S. You should, since you're in the movie zone, Jeff, you should go post the Spider-Man podcast that you were on. Get that up there. Speaking of podcasts, that should be posted on 411. This Tuesday, Robert Cooper and I return to the 411 Music Zone podcast. We will be reviewing Hatebreed's newest album, The Divinity of Purpose. Highly recommend it if you haven't listened to it on Spotify yet or spent a buck and gotten it off of iTunes. I was never the hugest Hatebreed fan, but this album impressed the hell out of me, so I'm going to glow about it this Tuesday night. So you can listen to that live, and hopefully shortly after that it'll be up in the Music Zone. Beyond that, I'll be covering Bellator this Thursday night, and then that's it. I'm off again. I wasn't planning on covering the Rousey fight, but since we've been snubbed temporarily from that, I'll be doing live coverage of the Rousey fight since I didn't do it for this one. All right, that's it. That's the show. I want to thank everybody who got up early on a Sunday morning for the past 2 years to listen to this show live. We appreciate you. Numbers are good. The show's trucking along. But, sometimes you have to move things around. Life gets in the way, blah, blah, yakety schmackety. So we're going to keep doing the same show, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, same hour and a half, same format and everything else. Maybe we get a few more of the writers on since it's at night instead of during the day. All right, that's it. That's all I got. What?
I love you, Mrs. Rattlish. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll let her know. All right, so
got it.
For the dedicated to my wife Jeff Harris, for Locked in the Guillotines, Robert Winfrey. This has been the 401 Ground and Pound Radio Show. Until next Saturday night at 9 p.m. Be well, be safe. Sorry, Sunday night 9 p.m. Be well, be safe, and behave.